You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Yeah, totally. I smelled it for one, because I love the smell of like a vinyl and like freshly printed paper. And then like kind of felt it and like looked at the vinyl, because it's a cool variant. It's like a black and gold variant. And then just play it finally. And then just kind of reflecting on how I got there. And it's crazy to think that all that, I don't know, like, I guess some artists are different, but all that suffering or all that shit you put into making that is just now this. So it's kind of crazy to like contextualize it in that sense, that all those years and years of just fucking in the studio grinding, like suffering in your life, just putting everything you have into something and holding it in your hand like this is just a really interesting feeling.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians, talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. I hope you had a killer weekend. I most certainly did. This Vox and Hops episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal are Montreal's premier metal promoter, and if you are ever in Montreal and you are looking for an amazing metal show to go to, trust me, Heavy Montreal will have you covered. I'm beyond stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Did you get a chance to check out the brand new Cryptopsy song? I hope that you did. It is now available on all streaming platforms. It is the first single coming up from our first album in over 10 years, called As Gomorrah Burns. I am so excited to finally talk about the brand new Cryptopsy record that's coming out on September 8th via Nuclear Blast Records. Do it. Go check it out if you haven't yet. If you have, check it out again in abeyance. It's available on all streaming platforms. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. More than that, I would love for you to tell a friend about the podcast. If there's someone in your life that just loves tech death, well, you should absolutely let them know that the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast exists. You can tell them that there are over 400 episodes where I sit down with some of the world's best metal musicians, talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. If you would encourage one of your tech death loving friends to become a brand new Vox and Hops head, that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, today on the podcast, I'm very stoked to be with Justin McKinney of the Zenith Passage. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops episode number 421.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I'm very stoked to be with Justin McKinney of the Zenith Passage. Justin, we've known each other for quite some time. We hung out for a few weeks back in 2017 on Devastation on the Nation, when Cryptopsy was headlining, playing None So Vile in its entirety. You were out with the Faceless for half the tour, so Shreddy Bear was replacing you. Malcolm, who subsequently then became a Vox and Hops alumni from Inferi, and then you popped into the tour halfway through, which must have been a difficult thing to do because like, the vibe of the tour is already happening. How did you approach that? Let's start with that question. How did you remember that popping in halfway through Devastation of the Nation and having to sort of like meet everyone and be friendly with everyone, like in the Cryptopsy camp, let's say, because I'm sure you knew everyone else on the tour except for us.
Yeah, I remember that was the original plan, but it was it ended up that tour ended up getting canceled.
That's right.
Remember?
Yes. And it was exactly that whole thing. That's true.
Malcolm was there
to replace you. And then Malcolm ended up selling merch is what happened.
Yeah, I did merch. And then it got to a point where I was supposed to leave to Europe to do a festival in Spain. And of course that got canceled.
So you were both there and Malcolm was selling merch. And then it was only halfway through, I think it was in Reading, Pennsylvania, when we realized who Malcolm was. And we were like, oh, shit. And like Malcolm let himself go a little bit that night and opened up and was funny as fucking hell, because he was very quiet that whole tour. So now it's all coming back to me. How are you doing since then? It's been 6 years at this point. What's life been like? How you doing? You just cracked a beer. I like that.
I just cracked a beer, dude.
Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends, talking about their lives and music while sharing craft beers. What do you got right there?
This is a offshoot beer from LA. It's a relax hazy IPA.
Nice. Oh, yeah. Will you pour that on my side? I have a special beer that was given to me by good friend Drew Stevens, who is one of the owners of Kanawaki Brewing. Kanawaki Brewing makes Cryptopsy beers, and there was a paper label on this as I carried it home from La Canette, where I store my beers, and I lost it. But I found online what the beer is. It's their Golden Gate. It's an 8.2% mixed cultured brew that was aged in red wine barrels with wine musk and Hascap berries. This was brewed for their anniversary, I want to say. And totally funny, Drew Stevens literally just texted me.
You're living in a simulation.
I can't make this shit up. I'm going to crack this, and I would love to hear about your very first beer.
Yeah, this is just a hazy. It's from Placentia, which is East L.A. It tastes great. I don't know what's in it. It's just a hazy IPA. It's very citrusy. I'm going to just drink it.
Just drink it. Just enjoy it. Take me back to your very first beer, though. Do you remember the first sip of beer you ever had in your life? That first illicit golden liquid that probably wasn't that delicious as they tended to be?
It was a Bud Light.
Really? What's that story?
My dad was drinking Bud Light, and he had one in the fridge, and he went away to go to work, and I drank one as a kid.
And how old were you at this point?
I think I was like 14 or something.
Yeah.
I mean, that's legal in some countries.
Yeah, and it's a Bud Light, so it should just be legal. How did it go down? It was cold, so it was pretty smooth. It wasn't as brutal as if it was like a piss warm one.
No, it was interesting. I remember it was like an interesting flavor. I was like, oh, this is why people drink this? Like, I don't get it. But then I got buzz. I'm like, oh, okay, I see why people do this.
And I say it all the time. It's like metal. That first time you hear metal, you're like, what is this? Why do people like this? Why are they moving? And then you're like, oh, you get that high from it and then the experience of it. And then you just want more and more of it.
Yeah, exactly.
This is really good.
That looks delicious.
They've been fucking around with this mixed cultured where they blending barrels stuff. And the Hascap berries gives it a nice little sweet thing. It's winey. It's not too much. It's not like vinegary. It's really smooth, wild. The oakiness of the red wine is very nice. Cheers to Kanawaki and cheers to you for hanging out.
I could smell that beer from here, I swear.
It's fruity. take me to the soundtrack of your youth. When you're growing up in your parents' or guardians' house, what music was playing when you were not in control of the radio? What did your parents or guardians listen to?
My dad was like really into Rush and like a lot of the classic rock. So I was hearing a lot of like Black Sabbath, like Alice in Chains is a huge one that was always playing, Smashing Pumpkins, Metallica. So AC/DC, my uncle was a huge AC/DC fan. He was in an AC/DC cover band. So
really, what did he play?
He played guitar.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. So I've been surrounded by like, I guess, rock and metal for a good portion of my life. So I guess that's why I do this.
I like that. At what point did you bring something into the house and expose it to your parents and expose it to your family? And what was their reaction to this new entity in the household?
I don't know. Like, so I guess something they probably hadn't heard was like Korn. Mm-hmm. I remember my dad thought I was possessed by the devil for listening to it for some reason.
Really? That's so funny because Alice in Chains is not that far, you know, and Black Sabbath is not that far.
Not at all. But for some reason, I guess because it was newer metal and it was, you know, not something they'd heard before, they probably just associate it with some sort of Satanism, which is, yeah, really, really weird. But anyway, yeah, I guess that was the first interaction. My dad wasn't really into it. I remember it got to a point, he broke my CDs, my untouchable CDs, which I was so bummed. I was like, yeah, 14, 15 or something.
It's because he caught you drinking that beer, that's why.
That's probably why, dude. He's like, you son of a bitch. This, like, this
look
is
what
it.
This satanic music has made you, Dan. I was looking forward to that beer after work, and you drank it. But yeah,
it actually makes a lot of sense.
But since he was so into music and stuff, breaking a music CD, it's like a big consequence. It's like something like you must have done something to merit like a massive consequence, such as destroying something that he's also passionate about, albeit he wasn't interested in that genre.
Yeah, he was just, I don't know, he was just on one probably. I can't remember the exact stipulation, but it's probably just because I was being one of those just rebellious teens, and then I'm sure something happened and he broke it, but I got another one like a week later, so it's all good.
Try to do that now with the digital world, parents.
I know, it's crazy.
You'll have to find different consequences to scar your children.
You got to put a block on their phone or something.
Yes.
It's crazy the world we live in, right? Like there's no physical medium anymore for music. And I feel like kids like 10, 15 years younger than us, like maybe not have the same, I don't know, appreciation for it because they can't hold it in their hand, you know, like reading the liner notes and everything.
100%. And we, you know, what's funny is that you're doing it right now for the Zenith Passage Data Elysium. So you definitely put together like a liner note. You put all this extra effort into checking the graphics and making sure it's perfect for a minimal amount of attention as opposed to 10, 20 years ago, that piece of medium of connectivity to the band is going to receive.
Yeah, totally. We actually just got our copies in yesterday for the record too. So like being able to open it and feel it and like see it in a physical space is like kind of like a feeling that is kind of unmatched, especially when you've been like, you know, busting your ass on the record for so long. To just be able to hold it is just like a really like one of a kind experience.
What goes through your mind when you do that? Cause, I had a similar experience this week and, was it like next or did you actually take the time to embrace and like revel in this feat? Because creating a record, getting a record label behind it, putting it out and having everything happen and have it all line up is a lot of work. Did you take some time to feel appreciative that the stars aligned and allowed you to do this?
Yeah, totally. I smelled it for one because I love the smell of like a vinyl and like freshly printed paper. And then like kind of felt it and like looked at the vinyl because it's a cool variant. It's like a black and gold variant. And then just play it finally. And then just kind of reflecting on how I got there. And it's crazy to think that all that, I don't know, like I guess some artists are different, but all that suffering or all that shit you put into making that is just now this. So it's kind of crazy to like contextualize it in that sense that all those years and years of just fucking in the studio grinding, like suffering in your life, just putting everything you have into something and holding it in your hand like this is just a really interesting feeling.
It's extremely special, the relationship that we have with our material, with our what we pour into it, to simply just become a folder in our life.
Yeah.
And then
it's weird, isn't it?
The next folder, and then there's the previous folders, and then the we do it to ourselves, and the public definitely does it to us, is weighing those folders against each other, which is crazy.
Yeah. Insane. It's insane to like think like the amount of time that goes into that, and it's just, it's like a folder and
25 seconds someone gives it most of the time nowadays, and they're like, next.
It's insane, dude. Like, it just boggles my mind, but hey, whatever, dude, it's not for everyone, but still, like, for everything to be put into one compact thing is just a wild concept to think about.
Well, you're killing it, and I'm excited for the new stuff coming out July 21st via Metal Blade. Lexi Contagion just blew my mind, and I was watching it late at night, and I think I was like, I'm going to write Justin and set up a chat. So here we are. take me back to your very first show. Do you remember the first show, the first live music experience you ever experienced, the first show that you attended?
About the first one. There's been so many. I guess the first one maybe have been Garth Brooks, maybe?
My mind is blown. You know how many times Garth Brooks is coming up on the podcast in the past 3 months? It's unbelievable.
Really? Goth Brooks, dude.
It's like the third or fourth time, and I just can't get over how many times. It's so funny. So definitely like early 90s, he was massive.
He was a punk rocker, dude. He like destroyed his acoustic guitar on stage. It's sick.
So what was that? What was that vibe? Like, were you already playing at that time? And did you start playing because of your uncle? And was your uncle there with you at the show? What is this experience of going to see Garth Brooks?
So I grew up on a horse ranch. I'm here right now. I don't live there anymore, but
full circle.
I grew up on a horse ranch, and my grandparents are heavily into like, you know, horses, and they were cattle ranchers. So I grew up in like a very like cowboy-ish kind of kind of community, I guess. So I was wearing boots and spurs and all that shit. And then they were huge into country music. So when Garth Brooks came to Fresno, Fresno, California, we ended up going. And I remember seeing, I think that must have been the first time. I was really young. I was like 8 years old.
Wow.
So that was probably before I played guitar. I mean, I probably held one and, you know, fucked around on it, but I didn't really know what I was doing.
Damn. That's cool to take a massive show like that at 8 years old. It must have been intimidating yet exciting, yet I guess the music was playing in the house, so you must have known some of the tunes.
Yeah, totally. Knew a couple of them because, like, they grew up on that stuff here, like with Brooks and Dunn and George Strait and Garth Brooks and everything. It's kind of just everywhere around here. But yeah, like, I guess, like, technically, if you really want to say, my first concert was when I was in the womb, when my mom, she went to go see Van Halen.
Hell yes.
In 88. So I guess technically
this
that
is why
would be...
you do what you do. This is it. Something I've never asked anyone and I've never had the experience to ask it is, we see, like, cowboys being tied to country music. How do, like, horses react to different styles of music? Have you experimented with this? Do horses, like, freak out if they'd hear metal? I would imagine they seem very, very sensitive creatures. So I don't know how they would react to listening to the Zenith Bastards, let's say.
I haven't really played Winnie. Winnie's our last horse up here. She's really old. She's a 32-year-old horse.
Oh,
and
wow.
I don't think I've played any death metal in front of her, but I do play guitar up here a lot outside, and she comes up behind me. So I don't know. Maybe she's interested.
Interesting.
Also, the cows. There's a lot of cattle, and they're pretty interested by the sound, too. So I don't know. Also, I don't know if you've seen those videos of, like a girl will be singing in a field, and then all these cattle just come up behind her. And kind of, it's pretty interesting. I always wanted to try that, but yeah, I guess they're not too, like, thrown off by it.
Mm-hmm. I had to ask. How about your very first time on stage? Do you remember your first show?
Yeah, my first show was with this band in high school, and we played at another high school, at their high school, my friend's high school, during their lunch period or something in the quad area. And it was horrifying.
Because you were nervous or because you played bad or?
I just didn't. First of all, I don't remember some of their old catalogs, so I didn't really play. And wow, I just stood there. And it was like a new feeling, like performing. Like I had never performed in front of anyone. So it was, that was very interesting.
Take me back to the guitar, picking up a guitar. You mentioned at 8 that you probably had held one and played around with it. At what point did the guitar become such a big part of your life?
I guess, like, when I really started giving a shit about it was when I was in, like, my early teens. My uncle was a guitar player, and then my other uncle, my dad's side, he was a drummer. So
also in the AC/DC band, or?
No, totally separate, because my dad's side of the family lives in, like, Alabama in the South, and then my mom's side, which is here in California. So I was, like, spending time between both sides of the family and picking up, you know, different sides of the music spectrum from both of them. And both of them were into rock and metal, so it kind of, I guess, was motivating on both ends. So my Uncle Mike, my late Uncle Mike, he was the one who kind of showed me the way, like, to, like, metal and rock. He, like, had all the guitars and got me really interested in guitar. Like, we picked out a guitar, my first guitar, with him. And then I don't know, I just kind of started jamming with him. And then when I was back in Alabama, I'd jam with my other uncle, who was a drummer, and I'd learn, like, I'd kind of just try to pick up on, like, Alice in Chains. And I remember we'd always, like, jam Alice in Chains, and I tried to just jam with it as much as I could.
That's so cool.
So I was at a young age just jamming with a drummer. So it was just kind of, I guess, natural for me to just continue doing it because everyone else in my family was kind of doing it. So, yeah, I don't know. It made it really easy to keep going.
Yeah, if there's, like, support and you see that music is more than, like, lessons or being great, there's, like, a funness to it. I think that's an important thing to learn at a young age as opposed to no shade, I guess is the word, to anyone that's been trained classically, because a lot of that is perfection, and you have there's like not much fun. There's no like creative endeavor of it. It's you must be like a performance robot, and it can I can feel that being stressful. Like the what's that? There's a Japanese technique where you teach kids how to play violin.
Oh, the Suzuki method?
Thank you. Like that. Yeah. You know, it seems fun, but it seems very serious at the same time. And the kids just slay, but...
Yeah, it's like through colors. It's interesting. It's like using colors to identify... like different notes mm-hmm. and rhythmic motifs and stuff. So it's like really, I think it's pretty interesting. I wish we could have learned it that way, because it seems like it's a lot more effective than the way that we do it out here.
Mm. Well, we could bring it over. We can start something, Justin. at what point did you like start putting bands together and taking it like out of the jamming aspect, the cover aspects, and start composing your own music?
Well, I guess, yeah, it was that high school band, Makeshift Armada is what it was called. and it was like a metalcore-ish kind of band.
We had no choice back then. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. And then like, I just started figuring out how to write with people then, which was cool. And then I discovered Guitar Pro, tablature. Like I got really into tab reading, in high school. So I started figuring out how to just write my own songs in Guitar Pro, and then it kind of just took off in a whole different direction. Then my next band was a grindcore band, so a pretty big jump.
That is a big jump. Back to Guitar Pro, though. Were you writing stuff that was outside of your means and then had to physically catch up to what you were mentally creating? For people that don't know what Guitar Pro is, it's like a computer program that you can place the notes and then push play and it will play them perfectly.
Yeah, music notation software. Yeah, it's incredible learning tool. Yeah, definitely like instead of like trying to, you know, shed the lick or shed the riff, I would just input it into Guitar Pro and play it back and then know it like, okay, like I've discovered this riff. Now I need to find the next riff to go off of that. So
interesting.
That became like my building blocks, and like now my, honestly, I still do that to this day. Like I just put in the riff before I lose it. And then it's, it is somewhat out of reach of my playing, but it's like, all you have to do is practice it. And then you'll learn something from it. You'll make yourself a better player because
it's perfect.
You kind of have to play that song now.
Wow. That's scary. That's cool. I guess I sort of do that sometimes with the new record that's coming up there, that there's certain parts that are just a little bit out of reach, and we'll see how that translates to stage, but I'm going to practice and nail it. You're inspiring me, Justin.
Yeah. You mean you don't have a choice. You got to do it. It's like, shit, wait, I did that to myself.
Yeah, we chose the right singles. So if you get what I mean.
Yeah. See, it's kind of funny. You mentioned that the next single we're putting out, this month in June is probably the hardest song to play on the record. And wow. I'm like struggling to get it down right now. So it's funny that you mentioned that.
It's a struggle we all live with. I think it's just and then there's like people that are like, oh, I can't do it. Oh, I can't do it. And certain band members who I'm not going to name. And then they sit down and they just nail it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like it's that whole hype, mental hype up until they actually just physically approach doing it.
Yeah. And they're like, well, that's not that bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Like earlier, they're freaking out about it.
The whole time. And then 2 days later, they're just nailing it. Dad Elysium's coming up very soon. I love the first single. I don't necessarily listen to singles, but, you know, we toured together. I wanted to check out what was going on with you guys. Metal Blade release. Love that label. I think it's a good home for you guys. Talk to me about everything that's going on there. Let's start with working with Dave Otero, Vox and Hops alumni. I love him. He's been doing killer work with Legion, with Cattle Decapitation, so many Archspire, so many other bands. Talk to me about that experience. Did you go and live the whole immersive experience the way that Cattle has done it, the way Archspire has done it? Did you go and live on his compound, I think he calls it? Yeah. What was
Death Metal Mayberry?
What was that experience like?
Yeah, it was great. I remember he called it Death Metal Mayberry, but we stayed in his little red house, and exactly. I called it the prison. It looks like a barn, so I called it the prison barn. So yeah, it was fun. Like I had everything tracked besides like a handful of vocals. Like all the guitars were tracked, all the bass was tracked, all the synth was tracked, most of the vocals were tracked. I did all my singing parts there, and then I did, and then Derek did more parts there too. And then I tracked a lot of solos there, and we kind of sat and went through a lot of the mixing. And I fucking love Dave. He's one of the best dudes. I've known Dave for a handful of years before working with him, which was cool. So we already had, like, you know, a friendship to go off of, and we vibed, and it was very natural and felt like home there. And he's just a guy who gets it, you know. He's got a very keen ear. He can hear things that none of us hear, and he can, like, offer insight. Even if we don't even use it, it's, like, cool to hear his insight and then maybe start thinking about the part. But a lot of the melody and harmony that we use on some of the vocals was his idea, which was really cool to work with Dave on that. But the guy, I love that guy. He totally gets the music. We all vibe. Like, everyone has the same, like, kind of music palette in terms of the metal spectrum. So it was, like, everyone was just having a great time.
And he's super cool. And he likes good beer. Talk to me about doing vocals there. Why do you feel comfortable and confident recording guitars on your own? But when it comes to doing your vocals, why would you rather have Dave in the room pushing record and saying this is good enough?
Well, we tracked about 90% of the vocals in between my studio and Derek's studio. And it just kind of... We just ran out of time, so we had to do it there. But now that I've done it, I wish that we would have just done vocals there, because having Dave there and having his ear there and maybe pushing Derek in a different direction would have been cool to experience. So the next record, we're going to do that. But Derek and I have a really interesting way that we track vocals, so that's kind of the reason why we did it at my place.
Can you elaborate on that interesting way of doing vocals?
Well... So what we do is, like, I'm sure you might do it too, like, where you hum out the pattern, right? Like, mm-hmm. You find the pattern to the music, and then now you have to plug in all the lyrics you wrote into
that wonderful
pattern.
Yes. It doesn't take any time at all.
So, like, in doing that, some of the patterns were so complex that it requires, like, you know, a lot of finagling and figuring out how to phonetically get those words in there, which require to say a word that's not really the lyric, you know what I mean? So, like,
yes,
to make it come off the tongue a lot easier and fit rhythmically, you have to change the word a lot. And it requires a lot of tedious tracking things that we had to do to make it happen. So, and I didn't know if, like, Dave would be down for that. So I just wanted to get it out of the way and make it as smooth as possible for Dave, having everything ready for him. But I think next time we're definitely going to just do all vocals with Dave.
Pure immersive, just let him do his thing.
Yeah.
Having Derek join the band, it's been a while now, but new for me since we've had a chat there. I toured with Derek, I want to say, Summer Slaughter 2008. And
oh, yeah.
Just with he was with the Faceless at the time. And I remember, like, him no longer being with the Faceless and just being, like, sad, because he was such a goddamn good front man. Awesome vocals.
Absolutely.
And then John Firm came out, and I was like, fuck yes, this is going to be cool. And it's done some stuff, but it's not had the hype that I was expecting it to do. So having him with you and having him do what everything that's happening on Lexi Contagion, I was like, fuck, this is amazing. It's like Derek back in pure form. I'm very excited that he's a part of the project. So you must be as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like, being able to be in a band with him and Brandon, both people I've looked up to before the Zenith Passage, is kind of like a dream come true. Mm-hmm. So, like, growing up listening to the Faceless, like, Akeldama came out, and I remember it changed the way I played guitar, and looked at, you know, death metal. And then just seeing them live hundreds of times and then being like, damn, they just sound so good. Like, everyone is top notch in that band. And then now, like, years later, like, they're in the band. It's just kind of crazy, like, to experience that and work with them.
It's, you know, doing it for so long, being hammering through for over 10 years, almost 20 years at this point, you're a good human, prolific player. You're bound to connect with other prolific players and good humans, right?
Yeah, exactly. I guess so. It's cool too, because, like, Derek and Brandon and I became friends, like, before even talks of them joining the band. So
Which is important, because just having people come into your band is like a family. It's like a relationship. So to acclimate the relationship and to make the friendship just be a big part of being a part of the project is something that, honestly, and I'll say it, I wish Cryptopsy had done back in 2007 to me, as opposed to just bringing me into the band and then bringing me on tour eventually. I think that would have been a more...
you just get thrown in the fire.
That's totally what happened. But so good for you for doing that. I'm very stoked that Derek's a part of this. I'm excited to hear the rest of the record, because I was such a big fan of those early Faceless Records and John Firm. So talk to me about Tech Death and the evolution of Tech Death and keeping Tech Death fresh. I read a statement. It's from The Statement, that you guys are basically just pulling out all the stops and putting everything that you've ever wanted to put into this new record, the clean vocals, the jazz breaks, the dissonant black metal. Talk to me about just blowing the roof off of all standards and just being extreme in a new way, keeping Tech Death fresh.
Well, I guess my take on it is I wasn't trying to write technical music for the sake of being technical, which I think sometimes can happen.
I'm sure you did that earlier in your career.
Yes, like on our last record, I feel like I had something to prove, so I'm going to try to make it crazy and riffy and blah, blah, blah. But this one, I try to have a little more, I don't know, like maturity in the songwriting approach and kind of refined my songwriting and like riff writing and try not to get overboard on the riffs and just try to be a little more mature about some of the hooks and the structure of the song. And then at the same time, like, we're known for being a tech band, but it's like we're trying to do other things too and expand on our sound and experiment. So on this record, we did things that we probably aren't really known for. So
which are like a part of you guys as like humans,
as musicians. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's just a part of our palette. Like, you know, like we get compared to the Faceless a lot, which, you know, obviously for good measure, like four of the members were in the band. So it's just how it is. But it's just a part of who we are, you know, like we all share the same influence. Like, you know, like X-Tole's a huge part of our influence and our palette. And, you know, Alan Holdsworth, Cynic, like all those bands play on our music palette. So it kind of just comes out. We like pull from those inspirations quite a bit. So it comes out the way that it comes out, and it might sound similar to the Faceless, but it's just who we are. But yeah, like we try to expand on further, like the jazz part of it. And like, maybe even like the more like dissonant black metal that we're kind of like, Derek and I are heavily into like really gnarly black metal. Like I'm sure you heard on that John Frum record, that is really, really great record. Derek pulling out some crazy shit, like vocally.
Absolutely.
So like, trying to channel some of that too on one of the songs. It's like really inspired by like Plebeian Grandstand and like Dustbell.
Nice.
And you know, like all those,
just flexing your personalities. I like it.
Yeah. Just trying to like kind of just expand and experiment and see like where it takes us, you know, just following the thread.
Is that the maturity part of it is definitely the main reason why, but another reason why that I can see it's beneficial for a band to do that, especially the Zenith Passages, since you're always been like labeled a tech death band, I find Tech Death has, and certain bands have really not done this, but it's sort of just monotone. And you listen, you're like, this is fucking insane. This is so fucking good. And then the second song, you're like, yeah, this is also good. But it's because the shock value, it like you get acclimated to the intensity, so you become less and less impressed, despite the fact that the technicality is still there. But when you add in these other aspects to it, it creates more of a, like an atmosphere, and it creates more of like a humanistic evolution, like a ride almost. So when the technicality comes back and the brutality comes back, it's so much more impressive.
Exactly. That's I call it a death metal palate cleanser.
Yes, it's like a little sorbet.
Yeah, it's like having some ginger in there, you know, like you got to clear your palate.
Amazing.
So yeah, like that's the way like I try to think in the track listing too, is like,
yeah.
I you know, you get listener fatigue when you listen to this music, and it's not because it's bad, it's just because it's so fucking crazy, and it's like you want to like take it all in and enjoy every aspect of every song on that record. But like you need a break sometimes. Like, at least for me, like it might not be like that for everyone, but for me, like I need to take a break and like rediscover that insanity at a certain point.
Exactly.
And like bring me back to it. And so like your point, like it makes total sense. Like
that's Beneath the Massacre for me. I can listen when a new Beneath the Massacre record comes out, I listen to one song at a time and then I take a break and I go do something else and I come back and listen to the second song and I'm like, whoa, the whole time, you know, but I have to take a break.
Yeah.
If not, listener fatigue hits me.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's like a thing that was like highly considered in like putting the songs together, like in the song structure, like writing them a certain way and like even spacing them out the way they're spaced out on the record. Like towards the end of the record, it's a totally different record. It's not the first half of the record.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's like a total journey. So like the midway point of the record is kind of like,
is that like when you would flip the vinyl?
Yeah, exactly. On side B is where everything changes.
Okay. Where does it go? If you can tell me, I know we're early in the press cycle.
That's all right. It gets a lot more atmospheric. It gets more melody driven. It gets less like insane in the technicality part, but it also offers that too. Like it also it goes back to where the technicality is and the insanity is, while also expanding on the melody and like the big atmosphere of everything and just kind of just pushing away, but also taking with, if that makes sense.
It does. I am very interested in this next question. Now, you are typically packaged with tech death bands and stuff, but it sounds like as a band, you're trying to branch out and step, like still have your feet in the tech death world, but also put your feet somewhere else. So what would be a very cool tour package that would put the Zenith Passage in front of a whole new crowd of people, but it would still work outside of the tech death world? For myself, I wrote down before as you were talking, like Between the Buried and Me would be something that would make sense from what I'm hearing.
Oh yeah. Like I'm a huge BT BAM fan. I toured with them with Surruption when I was playing with Surruption, and that like kind of hit one of my bucket list items. Like even though it wasn't my band, it was like, fuck, I got to tour with BT BAM.
Yes.
But
Surruption rule.
I think I fucking love Surruption. I guess a band I would really love to tour with would be Ishan's band.
Hell yes.
Or even Opeth. Like,
hell yes.
I feel like all roads lead to Prague or jazz, right? Like it's just kind of feels like that's just the destination sometimes.
You're
but,
going back to your dad's roots with the Rush there.
Yeah. It's just always all roads lead to Prague. It's funny. Like, I don't know. I just keep, it's not like I'm trying to not do tech, but I would also just like to not always do tech. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be like pigeonholed into always having to do that. Not that there's anything wrong with it.
No, because there's amazing things happening in tech right now with like Archspire and Entios. Entios are also flexing into different areas.
Oh, absolutely.
I can definitely see you guys doing something interesting together and it being something new at the same time, you know? Definitely this new age of tech death. I think it's super interesting.
Yeah, like it's just incorporating different music elements that aren't typically associated with, you know, traditional tech death means, you know, like, I don't know, like maybe try to sing a little bit on some stuff.
Allowed now. Most people, 2007, we're not allowed.
Yeah.
I learned that.
I know, we're still kind of not allowed. Some people don't like it, but hey, that's all right.
It's okay. They get over it.
Yeah, they get over it.
I live through it.
Yeah, they live right through it. And also, like, you know, like some of the black metal stuff, like it's like, it's not like I'm trying to push in one direction. I just want to like explore my palette more. And whether that be, you know, future funk or
artistic freedom, which is very cool.
Yeah, exactly.
You found a way to like expand the tech death umbrella far enough, wide enough, so that all of your interests are falling underneath the umbrella, but you're still completely underneath the Zenith Passage umbrella, which is amazing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So it's like you can still be intense and the music can still be like really, you know, highbrow and extreme, but you can also kind of expand on your musical palette and your musical inspiration. And that's what we're just trying to do. We're not trying to do like a 180 or do anything,
no, exactly.
But we're just trying to
just an inch at a time. Is there anything that you guys tried that was just too far and then ended up on the cutting room floor because it just didn't fit underneath that Zenith Passage umbrella?
There's one song that's on the record that is not Zenith Passage, but it is the Zenith Passage. And it's the track 8. It's called Automated Twilight. And it's a very I don't know how to explain it. It's very like plebeian grandstand ish. And then like also Ishan ish, I guess in a way. And I don't know. It's kind of its own thing. Funny enough, like we actually did reach out to Ishan to have him do a guest part on it, but he was like so busy that it's hard.
Okay. Next, he's going to regret that.
But hey, I'm just glad that he responded and knows who we are. That's the only thing that matters to me. But so I ended up singing on it. So, and I tried to like mimic that Ishan, like leprous kind of sound as much as I could. It's really, really hard to do that. Those guys sing so well.
Absolutely.
So like that's probably the most different song that we've ever done ever. And some people might like it. Some people might hate it. I don't know. It's
track
interesting.
Eight. It's track eight. So it's, you know,
yeah,
if they make it there, that far, they're going to be invested enough to listen to that one. And, as you were talking, I was like, oh fuck, Leprous would be a great band for you guys to tour with too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely like older material. Very, very, very much.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hopsheads? I just want to take a little moment about Cryptopsy's upcoming tours. That's right, I'm talking about the Scream of Perseverance tour and our headliner dates that coincide with that tour called As Summer Burns. The Scream of Perseverance tour is kicking off at the end of May and runs all the way until the end of June. We are supporting the mighty Death to All. We are going all over the United States and we are hitting some of Canada. So excited to be honoring the legendary music of death alongside amazing musicians that performed on these albums. Even more stoked to be doing some headliner dates in some cities that I've actually never played in. If you are planning to come to any of these shows, you should definitely grab your tickets by going to voxandhops.com/summer and you will be able to grab all of your tickets there. That's voxandhops.com/summer. Do it, people. Come hang out with me. Enjoy life, metal, and craft beer in your hometown. Come to a show. We're going to have a great time. Now, enough about all of that. Let's get back to the episode.
Something that's very, very important for me is talking about mental health. It's something that I think that everyone should just face and be open about and discussing, seeing that not everyone is 100% perfect all the time, the way that social media, we reflect ourselves being just the most ideal, perfect lives, and it's not true. So I love to ask how my guests cope with the darkness. What is your tactics? What do you do to face those darknesses? And what do you do to get out into the light if you're ever in the dark?
Yeah, I mean, the pandemic, you know, hit everyone a certain way, and it hit me in a certain way too. But even prior to the pandemic, I was like not really involved and really stoked on metal music, and I kind of took a step out and kind of explored, different things on my palette. And
like, did you put your guitar away? Or were you still doing guitar?
No, I was still doing guitar, but I was doing more jazz and just kind of really interesting kind of just things that I wouldn't necessarily get that into musically. So yeah, like a lot of crazy like future funk, I guess neo soul was what it would be considered. So I really got involved in that, and then just kind of exploring my instrument a little more, like harmonically, you know, and in doing that, like it kind of helped me get out of a dark place. And then even disconnecting from music itself and like my instrument itself, and then just kind of disappearing into nature is like a big thing for me. Like I have to disconnect and be alone, because I'm like, I can be mildly reclusive sometimes, and I have to have like that alone time and like be able to be okay and discover things about myself in my solitude. And that works for me quite a bit, because I'm like an introverted person, so I always have to, like, you know, after every social interaction I have to take like a day off.
Like, oh, I hope that this interview is not one of those.
No, like this, like, say, you know, you're on tour, dude, and you're on tour, it's never ending, dude. Everyone,
it's the worst. Yeah. I love it, but it's also the worst. It's like, that's why on tour I disappear.
Yeah,
every day I open my Google Maps and either I walk to a bar nowadays, but back in the day, I would walk to the green, whatever the green was on my Google Maps, and I would go there just to be alone and be with trees.
Exactly.
Because I think you're onto something, that humans, we're not meant to live the way that we live in cities.
No.
We're not meant to live like this. It's just something that happened through society and civilization just becoming more and more busy yeah. and more evolved. We're meant to grow up the way you grew up on a ranch, growing yeah. our own food and living off the land and having space and having quiet and not having a telephone that's constantly just flashing in our face, giving us that dopamine drip, the everlasting scroll. This is all the most negative stuff that's happened in human evolution, I think. So,
oh, totally. It's everything's on display now. You can't do or say or feel anything without anyone knowing about it or having an opinion about it, which is kind of frustrating.
You definitely went through a whole shitty spiel there that I'm not going to go into, but you definitely have come out of it stronger since all of that stuff happened in your yeah. life back in 2018 or something, I want to say.
Yeah.
Where it was very yeah, splashed all across everything, so.
Oh, yeah. And, like, I feel like just seeing, like, friends and, like, friends of friends, like, seeing what happens on the internet, and it's just like, dude, it's really hard to be on the internet any to do anything anymore. Like, just it's just like a constant echo chamber and just a battleground for everything. So disconnecting and like just saying fuck everything that's on the internet, let's just go back to like not doing anything, like taking a social media break, like putting your phone down. Like I do this thing, well, I'll forget my phone at home on purpose so I don't have to look at my phone.
It's amazing. Forgetting your phone and like just being free is a good tactic. I need to do that. I need to take it more seriously. Sometimes I do that. I like leave it on the counter and I sit on the couch late at night when I typically do all my spiels. So I need to take it the next level for sure.
You know, some people like they have a thing where they don't bring phones in the bedroom.
Mm. I have, but I use it as my alarm and I have music on it. I have this whole routine, but there's a way that's just me coming up with excuses to watch stuff in bed.
But isn't it funny though? Like it's like so a part of us, like it's an augmentation of humanity, yet we hate it. Mm-hmm. But we have to have it, isn't it? It's like so interesting to think about.
It's probably not healthy. There's going to be studies about this.
Yeah, it's also healthy in a sense to where it gets you in a good routine. You know, there's like quality apps out there that help you, you know, like stay in a positive mental state and like help you like develop like good habits. But then you can also, you know, fall into the doom scroll. And
there's also Untappd that makes you just want to taste more and more things.
I love that app. That's great.
I don't do it. I can't do it. I'm too obsessive. If I did it, you guys would see everything that I've drank. But but it's true. It's true. It's the connectivity is the main thing that I've gained from the internet, being so close to everyone despite being so far apart. It's one of the main reasons the podcast worked, just being able to connect with everyone so easily. So many friends from so many years, just to write a message, set up a conversation, release an episode. It's amazing. This is one of them right now, you know? So I think
it's great.
So cool. Something that I'm doing right now is a new segment for the past year, since January, called Fight the Hops, where I ask my guests a short-term goal, something that they're hoping to accomplish. It could be personal. It could be business-wise. It could be career-wise. It could be anything, relationship-wise. Something that you're hoping to accomplish, a small-term goal within the next month or two. What are you doing right now to fight the hops?
Well, right now I got a lot on my plate, so I'm just trying to prioritize and achieve things like as they come. You know, like as you know, like touring and getting prepped for tours is a whole job in itself.
Especially if you do like the in-ears and the tracks and everything and having to record all the other stuff that like the things that people we're not supposed to talk about that we do there. It's horribly fun stuff.
Yeah.
Which I don't have to do. Christian Donaldson has to do it, but I have him telling me how much work it is. I appreciate you, Chris, but
yeah, that in itself is like a job. And then, you know, having like a full-time job on top of that, and then just trying to, you know, while also combating all the insanity that comes with, you know, being in a death metal band and then working a full-time job while also trying to maintain a relationship that's like very, very difficult to do. And like, you know, everyone has needs and everyone has needs attention, and it's like, it's really hard to do. So like just taking it day by day and as it comes. And I've been getting better about making lists and trying to check lists as it comes. And it's pretty cool to see things to like write things out and like see it in a physical form, I guess, and like see it on paper or on your phone, and you can be like, oh, that's not that much shit. Why am I tripping out? Like, why do I have so much anxiety? So
that's
like,
the insomnia just, late at night trick there. If you're like, ah, yeah, when the deadlines are piling up and you get up in the middle of the night, you write stuff down and you're like, okay, tomorrow morning, I see you. And it's very rewarding to go through and like cross out these things. And you're like, oh, I accomplished this today. That's very cool.
Exactly. Yeah. Even just like with anything in life, I found that is if you just write it out, like even if you don't ever plan on using it, if you just write something out and it gets out of your system, I mean, you already feel better. It's kind of interesting. Like you write, like, I don't know, some people like, you know, journaling and shit, but like, that's not really my thing, but I tried it and it's like, wow, I feel better just by writing it. And like, I can just throw it away afterwards.
My wife, throughout the whole pandemic started doing The Artist's Way. I don't know if you've heard about this. It's this book that started in the '90s and it really helped her. Like you write out these pages every morning. And you just write, you need to write 3 pages and you just write whatever's on your mind. And then she ended up like focusing and recrafting her whole life by writing pages every morning, but it takes time, but it was amazing. We had time. It was the pandemic, right? So she like changed careers and it's just amazing. And started focusing on the projects and stuff, such as writing those children's books that we did together.
Oh, that's great.
Just so cool to the power of, like, the human mind is very complex, but just the simple task of writing something out can really help clarify jumbled thoughts.
Yeah, exactly. Like you get lost in the static in your head, you know, like, and then seeing it contextualized on a physical format allows you to like reflect and be like, oh, maybe it's not as crazy as I think it was. Maybe I can actually do this.
Yes. Well, the sky is always the limit, and we should always try our best to just achieve things. And if you write it down to it, it's in the world. It's like if you say it on the podcast, it's in the universe. It might happen.
Yeah, exactly. Sigil magic, right?
I love it. I love collabs. This is not one of them. I almost brought one, but I decided to bring this one instead. Vox and Hops has released over 60 to 80 collabs in the past 4 years. I love making collabs. I love making beers. I love making teas. You have a Kiesel guitar. Is it a signature guitar? Have they hooked you up that hard yet? So you have a collab in that aspect. But if the Zenith Passage were to make a beer, what style of beer would it be, and what would you call it?
It's funny. We actually played a brewing company on our last tour a couple weeks ago, and
you have to give them a shout out. Who is it? I want to know.
Ribald Brewing. They're in Nevada City.
Oh, okay. I don't know them.
They make really interesting sours. They're called smoothie sours.
Oh yeah, they're crazy. Those things are so popular. Yeah.
And they make really good, like they make a quality michelada, which is a very hard thing to do, but they do it right.
Nice.
And for being in Nevada City, like that is like sick, dude. Cause Nevada City is like way out in like Northeast California, near Sacramento. So having a quality michelada there is sick, and an awesome brewery and a venue that is like welcoming death metal bands. Like it's like a newer venue, like. Huge shout out to them. Those guys are so sick.
Very cool.
Yeah.
They're on my radar now.
Yeah, they're sick. Quality dudes.
So would you go with a smoothie sour? What would you go with? You're drinking a hazy now.
Yeah, I don't really, you know, it's funny. I don't really drink hazies. Like I used to be a really big IPA guy, but I don't know. I think I've just gotten so over that flavor profile, you know, the hoppy, the bitter hop thing. I've been like a cerveza guy now.
Yeah. With a nice little Mexican lager. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. They're so good. Like, I guess that's why, like, I would, if I were to do like a Zenith one, it would probably be like a Mexican lager type with lime and salt.
Hell yes. Let's do it. Let's find someone. I like it.
Hell yeah, dude.
One last question. Classic Vox and Hops wrap up question. It probably doesn't happen to you very often, but every once in a while it happens to everyone. What is your hangover cure?
My hangover cure is Pedialyte and Taco Bell.
Hell yes. That sounds like an Alexander Kendrick trick, but it works, people. It gets the stuff out. Justin, thank you so much for taking the time, hanging out with me, talking about your life, talking about music, talking about craft beer. That Elysium's coming out very soon, July 21st, Metal Blade Records. It's a banger. It sounds like it's going to be really interesting, and I can't wait to totally dig in and enjoy the whole record. I can't wait to hang out with you soon. Justin, thank you so much. This has been great. I'm happy that we connected 6 years after hanging out last time. I truly appreciate
it. Yeah, dude, cheers. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you all so, so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, this was an awesome conversation. I am so damn stoked that I reconnected with Justin after all these years. I am very happy that I was watching the video for Alexa Contagion and decided to hit Justin up so that we could have this chat. What an amazing approach to tech death they are bringing to the table on this brand new album, Dead Elysium, which is coming out this Friday, July 21st. Go check it out, people. It's fresh. It's experimental. They are pushing the boundaries of what tech death is, and I freaking love that. Massive thanks to you, Justin, for hanging out with me. Really appreciated it. Can't wait to hang out face-to-face real soon. Now, if you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com. When you do that, you shall receive one email a week that contains all of the details of everything that has happened recently in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. You will get to see which episodes I dropped recently. You will get to see which episodes I have coming up. You will also get to hear about any projects I have in the works before I announce them to the public. And you'll get to see which albums the Vox and Hops album review crew have reviewed recently, as well as the brand new albums that have been added to the Brutal Awakenings playlist, which is curated by Jerry Monk, Vox and Hops' metal architect. Jerry goes out and listens to everything and puts the best brand new extreme music all on the Brutal Awakenings playlist for our listening pleasure. It's available on both Apple Music and Spotify, and if you are ever looking for something new to listen to, trust me, the Brutal Awakenings playlist will have you covered. There's always a lot of stuff going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, and I hate when you miss a single thing, so please do me a favor and sign up to the mailing list. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts. I hope you have a killer rest of the week. I will be back next week with two episodes, the final two episodes before I take a month-long break in August. But until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops hits.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.